As a bird in flight stoops to drink of the waters, so did man stoop too swiftly to drink of the waters of experience. You are all part of one whole. Without the inclusion of the least reputable of human beings, heaven would be incomplete. Can you accept that? AI thought for a while before I answered. Then I asked, AO, but why could we not have been told all this before? AO, nothing has ever been denied or hidden from you. The sun is always shining, though at times in your winter you feel that it has gone from you forever. You see only clouds. The truth has always been available to man, but for his own good. When he was in the dark ages of his experience, it was obscured in myth and symbol that he might not use it to his own destruction. Your books of Genesis and Revelation are examples. When you are ready to comprehend their meanings, you will find understanding of them. AO, but now man's spiritual nature is in the ascendant through the terrible sufferings of the past 50 years. A great deal has been happening behind the scenes of his renaissance. Think how the so-called backward countries of your world have increased in intelligent understanding through the last decade or so. It is out of all knowledge of what they were. You will say that it is because of the triumphs of science. Yes, indeed, but you allowed that scientific knowledge to percolate through into the world. You know that cosmic rays are constantly pouring forth into your world. Does not Revelation say, AO will pour forth my spirit upon all flesh? And you know what the promised result would be? Intense disturbance, great fear and insecurity, and seeming great loss, but in reality great gain. That is your situation today. The light is penetrating into the darkness in men's minds and driving it out into expression so that it might be transmuted and destroyed. It had to be. God is indeed intervening in the affairs of men, fulfilling the work begun by his manifestation in the Son of Man 2,000 years ago. AO, yet the conflicts in your world are as nothing to those in the realms contiguous to it, those dark realms where you send your evildoers in terrible procession. You are sadly mistaken if you imagine that death puts paid to a life of selfish and evil deeds. Yet the soul of the most intransigent rogue is as precious to the Father as any other. And most of your upheavals are but reflections of greater ones occurring in the unseen realms of darkness where the light has such terrible effects. AO, but it all seems so unjust, AI burst out, AO, so many innocent people having to suffer with the guilty. AO's thought for a moment before he replied. AO, no, there are some who think that those who suffer are paying for the misdeeds of a former life. To some extent that is true, but you would be greatly mistaken if you were complacent about it. The whole concept is incomprehensible as long as you regard the person as an individual, existing alone. Only when you ponder over the universality of mankind, regarding yourself as well as all others, as having no separate existence, no possibility of living by yourself, can you begin to find justice in what seems to be so unjust. If you sin, you drag the whole of humanity down with you. If you achieve a spiritual triumph, you uplift the whole of humanity by that extent. God cannot save you by yourself, he can only save the whole of humanity, with not one missing. And suffering is inseparable from redemption. Moreover, there is a law of compensation by which those who give themselves into the arms of remedial suffering achieve a greatness not obtainable by any other comparable means. There can be no injustice in perfection, and the Father is perfection. AO, do not lose heart, all is in perfect order. You can only delay the ultimate consummation in time, not in eternity. And God's patience is surely not endless. So you must not regard yourselves as pawns in a titanic game, or the victims of a blind evolutionary process. The end is sure and benign in the eyes of the Heavenly Father, who could not possibly connive at chaos without meaning. Try and forget the present and take the long view I have tried to show you, the rescue of the whole of humanity rather than a select few. Many, many thousands are working behind the scenes in the world of spirit around you, working against the defiance of mankind exercised through its free will, but with all the power of omnipotence behind them. Take comfort from that thought. It is this long slow climb back to nobility of mind that has puzzled your anthropologists and made it difficult for them to see beyond the physical. Ayo, those who took part in that spiritual rebellion were so driven out of the sight of God that they could no longer live in terms of spirit and were thrown back upon their own inadequate resources. They fell into darkness and were given this supreme mercy of forgetfulness in human incarnation, albeit the only bodies which could sustain them were of necessity crude and unintelligent. These were the indigenous inhabitants of the earth, brute man, whom your Genesis describes poetically as the daughters of men, while to the lovely beings in the Garden Beautiful who descended to their aid, it gives the name of sons of God. Thus there were two races upon the earth at the same time, one ascending out of the pit of darkness on a redemptive R, and the other descending upon the evolutionary R, a spiritual R, and offering themselves for the task of helping their fallen brethren. Both races belonged to the spiritual conception which you call man. Ayo, the fallen race, which postulated a fallen world, were not devolved from the animal kingdom, as some assert. The four kingdoms are linked in spiritual reality but not in physical expression. They did not evolve out of each other on the earth. To evolve a human being through association with an animal would be a poisonous mating and against natural law, as I shall try to show you in due course. A once again the time had come for Zeros to depart, always a moment of sadness to me. For I had come to love this great soul who was doing so much to illumine my understanding of spiritual matters. There was a bond between us that made it easy for him to express meanings to me that might otherwise have been obscure. With that smile of intimate sincerity that endeared him to me, he began to fade away from my sight, back to that wonderful realm where he had his real being. Chapter 6, The Fall of Man. On a subsequent occasion Zeros continued his discourse. Ayo, that which your ancient records refer to as the fall of man was quite different from the primal fall. The latter took place in eternity, in spiritual realms. The fall of man was a continuation of that process and took place in time, in other words within the dimensional world of time and space, when the defiant ones were not in the pristine nakedness of spirit but clothed in dense bodies. Thus the harm done to them by their continued defection was not so deep or severe as that which hurled their spiritual being from the sight and guidance of the Spirit of God. Ayo, you will recall the symbolism of your biblical teaching, how the sons of God looked upon the daughters of men that they were fair, and how they intermarried. It means that the Adamic race descended to the surface of the earth through incarnation and for many centuries aided the fallen race. But as time went on they became infected with some of what you call original sin, that dark stain which had perverted the souls of the sinful race, although while incarnate they were not conscious of it. Yet it seeped through their physical minds and infected all with whom they came in contact. It had to be. This wonderful sacrifice made by the Adamic race implied that they must face and endure this infection, for it was the only way in which free will could be transcended and guided in the right direction. Where evil is impregnated within the soul, the only way in which it can be got rid of is by some process of externalization so that it may be recognized and overcome. Where you have poison in a limb, you have to draw it out so that it may be destroyed. Ayo, but not only did the Adamic race descend upon the earth, as the aeons of time went on, but their whole environment fell with them. The Garden Beautiful literally melted from the stratosphere and drained down upon the cooling surface of the earth. You must understand that in the early stages both the fallen race and the Adamic race held bodies that in your understanding would be termed ethereal in nature, for the world was still far too hot and humid to permit of oxygen breathing processes. It was during this period that the perverted animal kingdom began its slow laborious processes of evolution from primeval slime, the chemicals which, in their finest expression, formed the material from which the Garden Beautiful was constructed, were those which you associate with water, hydrogen and oxygen, plus other ethers which you do not yet know. As the garden form broke up, these two chemicals were precipitated upon the heated earth in the form of water, and this formed the primeval mists of which your records speak. The water meeting the molten soil and rising in hissing streams into the air. In a similar way your oxygenated atmosphere took form. It was much later that the bodies of the indigenous inhabitants crystallized into human flesh, yet they were already in existence upon this globe which was to form their terrestrial habitat through so many centuries of broken history. In the early stages of physical existence, the Earth was still subject to violent adjustment of its surface as the crust cooled, so that there were many and frequent earthquakes with resultant floods and subsidences. It was not strange that with all this chaotic expression of natural events together with the inherent perversion in the people the Adamic race had come to help, they too should be overcome by this novel and difficult experience. So it was that the Garden Beautiful ceased to be expressed in form, yet its pattern, or reality, still exists, up there in the stratosphere, on a spiritual wavelength, waiting like the sleeping princess for the awakening kiss of the Prince of Peace, when once more it shall awaken to its real destiny and be the habitation of a rescued race of people. The first point of focus upon which the two races met and fused upon the Earth proper was the vast continent which existed under the collective names of Lemuria and Atlantis. The very mention of these fabled continents aroused my instant attention, for I have always been interested in the famous story. As the two races crystallized into human form more as you know it, Zeros went on, there was an interchange of character, degenerative to the Adamic people, and evolutionary to the indigenous people. The fallen race killed animals for their food and subsisted entirely upon flesh and roots. The Adamic beings for a long time subsisted on the fruits of the earth and their special capacity to draw in etheric sustenance from the clear atmosphere. But in time this capacity faded, and as intermarriage increased they too had recourse to animal foods and thus coarsened the fabric of their bodies, causing a further indrawing of the perversion of the fallen people through the poisoning of the bloodstream. It is interesting to compare the symbology of your story in Genesis with what actually happened. You have seen how the procreative system was established in the Garden Beautiful, with all its beauty of expression. Compare this with your symbolic fable of the birth of Eve through Adam's side. But as crystallization of the physical body set in, this method could no longer hold good, and childbirth took much the same form as you know, through labor and danger. No longer were newcomers born as adults, but perforce had to take infant form, in the initial stages being born as twins. I have told you of the parturition of the sexes on a human incarnation. Well, this is the point at which it became necessary. It must have been an agonizing experience for the souls concerned, to be split in twain, as it were, only half of their corporate being. Yet it had to be, not only because of the system of birth into flesh, but to inculcate that divine urge for reunion that was to form the lifeline back into pristine state. The birth of twins meant that the separation was not wholly complete, and the two halves, the masculine and the feminine principle of the whole being, were enabled to remain in contiguous existence for a varying period. But as life coarsened and the experience deepened, this merciful provision had to be withdrawn and single births became the general rule. When you reckon on the impure and difficult nature of human existence, with its proximity of good and evil, the one rubbing shoulders with the other, you can see how impossible it would have been for the complete soul, naked in all its glorious innocence, to hold and retain a physical body, with all its inherent impurities and its often terrible environment. It would have fled the body in horror, but in its bifurcation it was bereft of much of its spiritual memory of what it really was, and thus was armored against this harsh experience. So each must seek the other through the endless arches of the years, unwittingly providing the urge for reunion, which is that urge to regain the heights that is the ultimate destiny of all. When each severed half of one soul has learned the great lesson of creation, to love the Creator and the creation, which includes every living soul, then they will be ready for that divine consummation at the glory and wonder of which you can only guess. But you must not think that this divine drama of affinities was in the nature of a punishment, for perfect love cannot punish. It was imposed by necessity, not in the divine plan at all. Spiritually bereft, man longs for his lost soulmate, part of himself. But having drunk of the waters of Lethe, he remembers not the real facts and so seeks union with the woman of his choice, and too often with any woman. You must not assume that there is any disloyalty in a man and a maid falling in love and marrying, It does not mean that they are soulmates reunited, though that sometimes happens. For the reunion of the soul is something far, far above what you call sex. And even though soulmates may meet in incarnation during their search for truth, they can never taste of the reality of their reunion until they have achieved that breadth of understanding wherein they could not love each other did they not love all others as themselves. Ponder that thought, for it means much. If you lift the whole conception into the supreme love of God, you will not find it so difficult to grasp. Heaven is not a paradise for honeymoon couples. There, all is unity, all is perfection, all is love. In such a conception you could not visualize a possessive love, any sort of division or separateness, any contrast. Yet in it there could be nothing static, all is a melting glory, ever fresh, ever new. But then that is something a finite mind could not possibly encompass. That is for the future. For a while there was silence as I pondered over the endless avenues of conjecture that opened out from this presentation of so difficult a concept. Tactfully Zeros too remained silent, his thoughts invading my mind with an illumination to light up the dark comers. At length he spoke again. Since that time man has never ceased to war against himself, against his environment and most of all against his neighbor. Civilizations rose and fell, often it seemed as if nothing had been accomplished, yet retrospectively it is clear that each time all that was valuable was carried forward, if not in this world then in the contiguous spiritual realms, where lived those who had tasted of human existence and profited by its lessons. Nothing is ever lost under divine planning. As the process of incarnation of sin-tainted souls went on, so was the evil flocculence, accumulated in those darkened realms, allowed to manifest through them, and thus was the infection gradually lessened, through the human body, through its processes of gestation, through its manner of excretion, was this evil accumulation given exit into the bosom of Mother Earth, that to undergo the rectifying process into its constituent elements, a process with which you must be familiar. Within the recesses of every human soul the light of love burnt on, none was ever bereft. Stagnation was obviated by the divine urge that wrestled with every fainting heart, till the restless soul reached out again and again, to overcome, to conquer, to achieve that which seemed ever beyond its reach. Such was the mercy of God. Many times has the fall of man been repeated in the ages that lie between. But the key to progress in this world of overcoming is to strive, to fall, to rise again. It is better to put a foot wrong than never to put it anywhere at all. Man must fall in this difficult world. The point is that he rise again and profit through experience. Man rises on the wings of pain. But do not despair, my friend, man has come a long way since those primeval days, rising out of all consciousness of what he was. And if it seems to you that the darkness is deeper than ever before, remember that with God all things work together for good. The dreadful tale of your own Nehru is but the final working out into manifestation of the remaining evil that forms the anchor holding you back from a true knowledge of the glories that await you. Already that evil is being recognized for what it is, an inhibition of the mind, and being recognized it is already losing much of its strength, for no longer do the majority believe in it, they are learning that it is something that can be destroyed and dissipated. With each passing day evil means less and less in the final analysis, and with that consummation there will remain only the need for eager minds to learn the truth of their own reality. Then, the kingdom comes. Such a dazzling prospect must have left me in a dream of conjecture, for when I came to myself Zeros had gone, and only the aureole of his presence remained to comfort me in my loneliness. Remark from Rune to this theme, according to the spiritual logical explanations of this, from the cosmically conscious Martinus, the so-called fall occurred, due to the fact that the beings in the highest light zones of existence were finally completely saturated with light experiences, and therefore sought the contrast, which for them was then attractive, that is the physical plane. Much more about this in the cosmic analyses of the aforementioned Martinus, who in the year 1921 underwent a total transformation of consciousness, in what he himself calls a cosmic birth, which opened up what he correspondingly calls cosmic consciousness. Chapter 7, The Crust Hardens. So far my visitor from other realms had shown me how intelligent life had descended into a near-physical existence on the Earth. Now he was promising me that I should see something of this primeval life. The Earth has never been without intelligent life in charge of its progress. Always there was the throng of angelic and elemental beings weaving divine purpose into its cooling fabric, while ever and anon members of the Adamic race would flash downward to make some imprint of their own lovely world upon its surface. Over measureless periods of time the mineral, animal and vegetable kingdoms responded to the divine touch, expressing something of their own beauty even through the distortion engendered by contact with the dark environment in which eager but fallen souls were waiting their chance to seek easement through incarnation into this new world. When we consider our dual descent from these widely differing races of beings, the darkened souls of the indigenous inhabitants and the splendid beauty of the Adamic race, we can recognize the origin of the dual characteristics in ourselves, our basic lower self, the natural man, and the higher self, the nobility that too rarely shines out through adversity. There is constant struggle between the two. The one belongs to the earth and seeks union with it. The other belongs to spirit and ever strives for reunion with spirit. The one lives by instinct, the other through inspiration. Between the two poles man lives and learns and progresses, suffering endless tension, yet in the main tending always upward. As the Earth's crust hardened it became more objective and at this point Zeros was able to take me once more to see a world in the making. Changes that must have been slow, and mutations that must have covered endless generations, were swift and kaleidoscopic to us through our numerous visits over great periods of evolution. And I was able to see how, through endless cycles of birth, life and death, the evil miasma inherent in the lower astral realms was being manifested into physical form and passed harmlessly into the soil, there to be transmuted. And it was borne in upon me that the compassionate love of the cosmic Christ was woven into every atom of this assembly, enshrining all in divine purpose. It became clear to me that such a sorry manifestation of living space could never have been the intention of perfect love but was rendered necessary by the defection of spiritual man. Though there was much beauty and wonder in this newborn world, there was nothing to compare with the pristine beauty and ethereal charm of the Garden Beautiful. Yet because the living Christ invested it, I knew that in terms of eternity, if not in time, the days of its shame were numbered and its redemption certain. All is ordained in love, observed Zeros as he summed up his description of this primal epoch. How could it be otherwise when a God of love, to whom nothing is unknown and who forgets nothing, is the reality behind it all? To postulate that this grand vista of divine redemption is the process of a blind evolution is only to epitomize the narrow viewpoint of the purely intellectual outlook, based upon material values. Your able scientists demand proof. But here the proof lies in another dimension. And when you consider how the very nature and density of matter has changed since those far-off days, how could any proof remain through the aeons of change and crystallization of every constituent in your world? This rescue of a fallen race is a gargantuan one, beyond all knowledge. The whole earth is invested with the love of God. And as long as man recognizes it and strives to live in its light, so long does he achieve peace of mind and sure progress. But where he opposes it with his free will, love ceases to be a warmth and becomes a consuming fire which burns him and causes suffering, not merely to the individual but to humanity as a whole. But in the end nothing can stand against the all-powerful love of God, so stupendous a power that if it were not veiled it would burn up the planet upon the instant. Even when man gains some small knowledge of these immense cosmic forces and turns them to ignoble use, thus perverting their natural characteristics, love steps in, passing through the prism of the cosmic Christ, to overturn and rebuild. Small wonder that suffering ensues. Can you not see how God only seems to be careless of his creation? It is only your lack of understanding of what is being done. The plan is so much vaster than you can conceive, it is not tied to incidentals. Evil is eternally being righted, The world itself is being lifted in vibration, little by little, so that with each generation it is more than it was. A many times zeros and I wandered through these uneasy swamps, and in spite of the embryonic nature of all that we saw, we could not help sensing the goodness that seemed to pervade it all. The breath of divine understanding and goodly purpose seemed to integrate and leaven the plastic soil in a way that could never be in our own day. In the splendor of a dawn, in the soft glow of a sunset, or in the ethereal beauty of the growing vegetation, even in the rumble of an earthquake or the crash of a storm, one could sense a presence, a radiant manifestation of life, hidden only by the phi tilde sectionate of matter. It is all gone now, for the crust has hardened and the senses of man have become veiled beyond the vibrations at which such divinity could be perceived. The very atmosphere has condensed until its opacity distorts human vision to the realities that lie beyond it. Only in some unfrequented spot, some high mountain top or the seabed momentarily uncovered by the falling tide, can that elusive sensation of extreme purity be regained, when you know what it is to hold all creation in your arms, and to feel the arms of the Creator about you. Back in my study, I questioned Zeros about the relationship of the human body to the anthropoid apes, upon the evidences of which so much reliance is placed by those who postulate a blind evolution. Zeros sat for a while in deep thought. "Ayo, that takes us into rather deep water, eh?" he observed. "Ayo, your researchers hold that man consists of a body, brain and growing intelligence, derived purely from mutational evolution. And they admit that there are great gaps in their thesis which they are unable to bridge. They look to find these in the future. But there is no missing link in the physical sense, they will never find it on that level. The fusion of human and animal flesh is against spiritual law. Such unions could only produce a perverted species which could not be insulted. Never did man assume form of an animal nature through procreation. Ayo, you will recollect that we left the erring beings who fell from grace, confined within the density of the lower astral plane which surrounds your earth, waiting for a chance to incarnate. You will understand that these beings still retained a memory of the great creative powers they had once possessed, terrible powers if used wrongly. For they had once wielded forces beside which your atomic fission is but a toy. So their very intelligence had to be veiled while they were incarnate. Ayo, the manner of creation, wherever it is met, can be seen to be in the form of patterns. The galaxies, the stars, every manifestation of life on your planet, presents itself in patterns. The seeding of a tree, human generation through heredity, all is done by patterns. And these divine patterns have their real blueprints in a dimension beyond your ken. An ape is born, like all else, from its own pattern, which may change according to environment but always remains a pattern, and it was from this undimensional pattern that the original form of man was created, because it was the most suited to the purpose. When the form had reached a suitable stage, the darkened souls were permitted to incarnate in these bodies. They were not brute animal forms, but to your present understanding they were almost ethereal, quite unsubstantial. And it was only through eons of time that they followed the trend of the earth and became solid flesh. But of necessity they were of a very low degree of what you would recognize as intelligence. As these creatures progressed and became more and more fleshly, the inherent urges that filled their soul being began to manifest, urges made all the more ending by the sex separation I have already described. Prompted by the tremendous desire force in them, some of the males sought union with the anthropoids, which only now, long after the humans, were reaching a state of physical evolution. And because there was an affinity between the two, in the pattern, monstrous creatures were born of the union. These could not be insulted and soon died out. Thus there are evidences of ape men, the remains of which have been discovered and have led to false conclusions. Has it not struck you how few of these there are? The bodies of the primitive men and women were not yet of such a coarseness that their remains could endure so long, and so none have been found. Ayo, it is of great importance that you should try and realize the truth of what I am trying to impart. For there is no concept so destructive to the idea of benign Godhead than this terrible thought that a God of love has experimented with humanity, dragging man up through endless centuries of suffering, privation and frustration, amid a nature which is hostile and destructive. Ao, fear that you may find it difficult to make all this sound convincing in your narrative.